You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony? You're a helpful snowman.
Bone Thugs Harmony. Dee dee. Okay. What a great way to start off a podcast for like a new listener. It's always at the beginning of the show when I'm imagining the new listener listening to this show. Once I get into it a little bit, I get over it. I'm like, well, nobody's listening to this, so it doesn't matter. But when I first start, I'm always imagining the new listener and thinking, yeah, I'm sure someone who's like, okay, maybe I'll give this helpful snowman a shot because they're insane. Because seriously, like, at this point, who's just clicking on a podcast to be like, oh, well, I've got an hour of time. I mean, wouldn't you have to have some kind of something pointing you towards it? I just can't picture this person in my mind who's like, whatever, I'll try a random thing. At one time, sure. Back in the Podcast Alley days when there was like 10 shows that had over 100 episodes and were still really happening, sure. Today, I don't know, man. But yeah, when I think about that new person, I'm like, oh, they must be really appreciative of me terribly doing the theme song to this show. The theme song is like, I think it's pretty good. It makes it sound like a real show. So I'm like, well, what if you, hey, Pete, I have an idea. What if you eliminated the one thing that makes this sound like a real show? What if you took the one legitimizing factor out of this and you just did it this way? It's important. These things are important. Speaking of legitimacy, so I was with Poon Master Flex at Hobby Lobby the other day, and I was bored because, so she made a very nice bill chart for us because we're splitting bills, and she'd made one online. Because, I don't know, she made one online, but she was like, I had to awkwardly remind her that we hadn't actually done the bill. Like, I had paid the bills and she had not paid her half back to me, because that's kind of how we're doing it. And it was awkward because I was just like, this feels weird with your girlfriend to be like, hey, where's my money? But she did, you know, whatever. She had just legitimately forgotten and then paid me my money. So she was like, I'm gonna make an actual physical thing to hang in our apartment, and then we can put the amounts on there and check off, you know, if you've paid and if I've paid you, and that way it seems pretty clear. And I was like, sure, sounds like a plan. Now, here's something I've noticed that I have as a weakness. If someone describes to me the layout of a room, I basically give up on trying to see it somehow mentally, and I just can't picture it. Like, even if I can picture, if they were like, okay, we're gonna do a layout, it's all your furniture that you own, it's all this and that, and I'm going to describe to you how it's laid out in this room, I will kind of, like, lose track of it. I need someone to, like, draw it on a piece of paper or something. Like, I just do not have that. I don't know if it's that I don't have the ability or if I don't have the interest. It's hard to say where the fault is. It's sort of like that Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours and you'll be good at something, right? And it's like, do most people get good at things they enjoy because they enjoy it, so therefore they're like willing to put in the time to get good at it? Or do most people enjoy things they're good at because they mastered it and it's something they're, you know what I mean? Like, and it's probably a little bit of both. You probably have some natural talent, which then prompts you to actually do it. Anyway, I'm not good at this. And so when she's like picturing, she is the opposite of me and has the ability to just picture things in her head in a physical sense and then make them a thing, a real thing. So she's describing it to me and I'm kind of like, you know, maybe you just need to make it and then I'll get it. So this is why we were at Hobby Lobby and why I got very bored, because she was looking at different colors of paper to put in this frame. Because the basic idea is it's in a picture frame and we use dry erase markers to write on it. And so she wanted something that would look fun and nice, but also that you could write on top of and the, you know, numbers would be visible and so on. And I don't know. I didn't get it until I saw her putting it together. I was like, now I get it. So she's looking at paper, and like that's like the most boring part of the craft store to me is the paper, because I'm like, eh, it's paper. It's different colors of paper, and you know she's debating different colors and whatever because she's got the vision, and I do not. If I was putting together an Avengers team, the vision would not be part of it. So she's looking at paper, and I get bored, and I start just wandering around. And I'm sort of horribly humming a Blink-182 song. I'm trying to remember which one. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun held such better days. Days when I... So I'm like wandering around, but I'm slowly humming it like... And not loud, but not quietly either. I should tell you I'm wearing sweats, like sweatpants and a sweatshirt. Have not showered for like a day and a half. And I'm carrying a child's plastic golf set. Which is, you know, for a, which was 40% off and purchased mostly as a joke for a complicated thing that's not interesting. But so I'm wandering around. I'm holding this golf set too. I'm kind of hugging it to my body. So I'm not just carrying it by a handle or something like an adult. I'm sort of carrying it like the way you would carry a set of bagpipes, leaned up against my shoulder and up in the air. It looks very weird. So I'm doing this, and I come out of the end of the hallway, aisle, and I see this girl who I immediately recognized because she job shadowed me this year at work. And so I have this sort of policy with most of the high school kids that I encounter at my work. I let them approach me first. I take like a doctor or, you know, therapist style approach, which is, hey, you know, I'll just let you go about your business. If you come up to me and want to chat or whatever, that's cool. But I'm also not going to like come up and say like, hey, how's it going? Whatever, you know. I won't initiate the contact unless it's a kid that I know pretty well. Like, if it's a regular book club attendee or something, I will say something because it's like, well, I'm going to see this kid again in 3 days. I don't want it to be weird when I'm like, so I ignore you out in public, but here we are at school, right? I'm guessing this is the tactic that most, like, elementary school teachers take as well, where it's sort of like, you know, I'm just going to leave it alone, and if they really want to come up and chat with me, that's cool, but if they don't, I'll probably just leave it alone. So, she's like, oh, hi, Peter. And I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? And she's like, good. So then she goes an aisle down. Now, and that's the end of it. And I was like, ugh, well, that wasn't me being seen at my best. Awkwardly humming a song, carrying this children's golf bag in my shitty-looking sweats with my greasy face in Hobby Lobby on a Saturday. But whatever. So Poonmaster Flex is pretty nearby, and here's this interaction. And she comes out to the end of the aisle a minute later, and she's like, who was that? And I was like, oh, that was a kid I worked with at from the high school at work. She was like, I heard her say hi to you and then go into the next aisle. And it must have been her mom was like, who was that? And her mom was like, oh, that's Peter. I job shadowed him or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I mean, her mom is, it's very reasonable of her mom to ask that question, because if my kid went up to someone who looked like me and was acting the way I was acting in that store and casually just said hello, I would also have some questions. I would be like, what is this? It's, here's the weird thing. I did not think in my 30s I would still be having this thing, because this is a thing like when you're in high school. And maybe it's not the same if you live in a city, but in a smallish town. You go to high school, and when you get off high school, whatever. The end of the day, you have your weekend. Why am I having such a hard time with this? On the weekend, let's say you're going to go out to Hobby Lobby with your mom. You would probably, you might not, like, get totally done up and whatever. Not that there was a lot of up to be done with a high school Pete, but you'd probably try to have some semblance of a put-togetheredness, because at some point, you weren't doing this, right? And then you ran into someone from school, and you were just like, oh my god, why didn't I brush my teeth before I left the house? Why didn't I put on, like, real clothes? You know, all these things I could have done so that they didn't see me looking like this. But you kind of feel like that's going to end in high at the end of high school, because, like, as you become an adult, you run into other adults, but I feel like it's a pretty even playing field. And also, in some ways, I feel like the more casual adult is the winner of that transaction. Because as the casual adult, you're just like, yeah, I don't really care. Don't really care about, you know, what this other adult that I work with thinks of. Because mostly, another adult you run into from work or something, I feel one of three ways about. Number one, we're like work buddies, so it's fine, and I don't care. Number two, it's like someone that I'm not buddies with, but we just have a very neutral relationship. And so, again, I don't care. Number three is like you run into someone who's like a boss or something like that, which a younger go-getterer me would have been like, oh, I wish I hadn't run into that person looking like this. But now I don't care, because I'm like, it's the freaking weekend. I'm about to have me some fun getting paper at Hobby Lobby. Not peeing on an underage girl, but just getting paper at Hobby Lobby. That's what I assumed that song was about for a long time. Turns out I was terribly wrong. Horribly mistaken. But such is life. You know, it turns out R. Kelly and I were living a different lifestyle and had different gauges and definitions of fun. What was fun for R. Kelly was not what Pete did for fun. And I assume vice versa. I don't know. I guess it's entirely possible that R. Kelly was doing what he did and occasionally would make a trip. And after the show, it's the Hobby Lobby. But I don't think that's what was happening. Round about four, we got to hit the lobby, which meant Hobby Lobby. But I suspect no, but, you know, that is a judgment I'm making. That is a preconceived notion about something. So I should not do that. I've learned that this is wrong. At any rate, that was my fun run-in. And Poonmaster Flex made a nice sign that says, "Bitch, where's my money?" And it's got gold on it. Because I was like, well, we were looking for money pattern stuff. But here's something that's weird. You go look at fabrics or papers or whatever, and they have, like, donuts, tacos, dinosaurs, Marvel Comics, DC Comics, all kinds of shit. Things that you wouldn't necessarily expect them to have, they have on a paper. They don't have any money patterns, which I thought was really weird. Like, I don't know why I thought it was weird. I guess because I had a use for a money pattern and was like, maybe. But then we didn't need them. Or they didn't have them. And so I was like, well, that's... Why is it the one thing that I really want isn't the thing, is the thing you don't have? That doesn't make any sense. I did see a money patterned flag the other day. There was a, so at my work, there was this art show. It was like a, I don't know, high school art show, I think, sponsored by one of our representatives. I think a congressman, let's put it like that. And he was, doing this, you know, but it wasn't supposed to be a political thing. It was like, whoever the congressperson is at that time would have to do this. So anyway, but he was coming to give a little introductory speech, which as a non-fan of this congressperson, I was like, you know, he did a good job of getting in, getting out, and not making it about him. So I appreciated that. But anyway, he sent his lackey to do all this stuff, and the first annoyance was we had to hang up a bunch of paintings and put them on easels and stuff. And we have this slat thing that we can hang art on, right, with picture wire. And so we could get about 6 to 8 pictures up there. And of course, because of the place I work, guess who's up on the ladder doing that? You know, they were all very busy buying their tickets to Captain Marvel. So a guy could be up on the ladder doing that. That's overly harsh and overly mean. But when you're up on the ladder and you're not happy about it, that's what you think about. Anyway, so I hang all these pictures. And I was in a very good mood on this day because I found out that a coworker that I don't like was leaving our organization. Not necessarily a coworker, but someone I had to work with from time to time, would no longer be with us, and I was walking on sunshine, as they say. So I'm hanging up these pictures, and it's kind of a pain in the ass, but I'm like, whatever, I'm happy. So I get done, I put the ladder away. Not 2 minutes later, this lackey comes and is like, so I was supposed to get the names of the artists and the pictures off the backs of the paintings, and I didn't do that. So can you take them all down so and read the names off of them to me and then put them back up? And I was like, God damn it. But this guy was very lucky. I didn't say this to him, but my thought was, you don't know how lucky you are that today I got some very good news, and really there's nothing you could do to bring me down. Apparently there's nothing you could do to bring me down because I got the ladder back out, jumped up there, pulled him down, all that stuff. So part of this, too, was the art show happened, and the guy had decorations, you know, to put up. So they had, like, American flag stuff and whatever. And because I guess I don't know what the theme of the art show was, but the potential prize is that, like, the winning winning art would be up in the White House for a little while, and you would get, like, a free trip to Washington, D.C., and you could, like, tour the White House and stuff, which I was like, well, that's a pretty good prize. Like, that's a solid prize for a little county art show or whatever, voting district art show. So I was impressed with that. So they had America stuff, but one of the things they had that I thought was in kind of poor taste was this flag, like an American flag size flag, except it was like a $100 bill. And I was kind of like, I see where you're coming from with this, because it's like, you know, U.S. tender, and I don't know, maybe you just like Benjamin Franklin or something, and your government, that's a government thing. I kind of get that, but like, what are you, a rapper on the side? Like, why do you have a $100 bill flag? Who's buying these? What percentage of them are like 90s rappers, or, you know, the aforementioned R. Kelly may have that hanging in his house somewhere. But it seemed like a weird, not tasteful thing for, like, a congressperson to have, right? Like, and do you really want to remind people of money when you're that person? Do you want to remind them of, like, their tax dollars and whatever, or I don't know. It was a weird thing, and I was like, where does this, who decided to buy this, for what purpose, and where does it usually live? Is it just, like, folded up in a box somewhere that they're like, I don't know, if we need some America stuff, just get this all out. But whatever. You know, what are you going to do? It is what it is. So last show was mostly me complaining about the Coachella lineup, because I decided to listen to it and see if any of it was worth my time. And I would say it was not. Most of it was not. And this is music that is not suited to my interests or tastes. And I will also say that I think music is a very personal thing. Not personal in the way of like, oh, this music tells my life story or something. I just mean personal in the sense of, I think music pleases people in a way that is beyond the way I can appreciate something like a movie that is like really well made and is a good, thoughtful movie that's not necessarily to my interest. I can appreciate that. I mean, I can watch a movie where nobody's in a cryo prison, Wesley Snipes is not involved, and Stallone doesn't hit him with some kind of freeze thing that, and then kick his head off and it shatters on the ground. I'm saying I can appreciate a non-demolition movie, Demolition Man movie, if I must. It's possible for me to do that. But I think music is kind of different. Like, I think music is harder to appreciate on that level for me. I think it's a little bit like food, where there's a more visceral sense of it. And, like, with food, it's kind of like, if something tastes like shit to me, even if the person spent a lot of time making it and used superior technique and stuff, it's just not going to be good. You know, I've had squid or octopus or whatever, and it was terrible. It was like one of the worst things I've ever tasted. And people will swear up and down like, well, here's what you got. It's just you probably didn't have it prepared right or whatever. And I'm like, that's perhaps true, but boy, I don't think it was to my taste. It was a little bit rubbery. It was a little bit hard to eat just as an object. It was hard to chew and swallow, and it was like the taste of it was not super appealing to me. I hated it. And so while, yeah, maybe I was wrong. Maybe the person who prepared it for me was wrong. But I would say that I'm not, like, jumping at the chance to try it again. This motherfucker, I let this guy onto the highway, and then, so he's in the right lane, and I moved over to the left to let him on, and now he's just, like, pacing me in the right lane. Like, he caught up to me and then slowed down and is just pacing me, and there's a car that wants to go by, and I'm kind of like, yeah, there's one of us whose fault this is, and it is not me. I just want everyone to know. Like, I wish I had a little LED screen on the back of my car and I could just be like, put an arrow pointing to the right and be like, I let this guy in and now he's doing this to you and I'm sorry. I understand. I use my mirrors. Anyway, so like, I don't think octopus is to my taste. Or squid, or either, really. It's just not for me. And I think music kind of works. I think music is closer to that than, like, movies and books. Because movies and books, at least, they can have, like, a visceral thing to them, but I think that they also have more to them than just the visceral. And for music, I think it's hard for me to get past the visceral if the visceral is, like, eh. If it's from don't care to terrible, it's tough for me to get past, and I don't feel terribly motivated to try. I don't really care, is what I'm saying. So anyway, you know, old man Pete complaining about things. And I also got some feedback that Poonie and Pete is better. And I don't disagree with that, but it's really more dependent on Pooney's schedule when that's going to happen and if it's going to happen. Because, you know, she's a busy person, and I don't really know how to... It's not fair of me to force her into doing a thing that I enjoy doing. If she wants to do it, then I will always have her on, and I will ask periodically, but... If she says no or is uninterested, I'll probably just let it go. So anyway, I learned from Michelle Obama the importance of leaning in. So when you have, I think it was her. I don't actually know if it was her. But let's just give her credit. Why not? I mean, what harm does that do? Take it away from somebody else who probably is not as important. I learned lean in. So when it's old man and that didn't work, I'm like, all right, well, let's lean in hard. So what I did was I got online and I looked up a list of Andy Rooney topics that he discussed on 60 Minutes, which I think I've done this before. I think I did like a Andy Rooney versus Pete face-off. But this is obviously going to be a little different. It was pretty amusing, too, because, like, okay, first off, I was sort of surprised that I couldn't find just the definitive list of Andy Rooney topics. Sometimes you get online and you think everything exists. You're like, well, it must all exist. But, and I was sad that it didn't really exist because I was like, I think just reading the subjects of his little rants would probably be a fun little thing to read. Just like everything that he has talked about, you know, this. And I was like, that would be some pretty entertaining content, I think, because I bet it varies wildly. So I couldn't find that. But what I did find is that Andy Rooney has written some books, and the books seem to be, he's got a few that are like books, but then he's got a few that are seemingly compilations of his 60 Minutes rants. So I took one that I could look at the index for and took the topics and was like, well, how about instead of Andy Rooney, Pete will handle some of these topics. I will tackle some of Andy Rooney's greatest hits. Now, I didn't write down all of them, but a very significant portion. And some of them are kind of hilarious. So let's just start at the top. Cookbooks. So what does old man Pete think of cookbooks? Well, cookbooks are kind of bullshit. And here's why. Most cookbooks, I don't think most people know this, but the way most cookbooks work is I'm Rachel Ray. And what I do is I buy recipes from a bunch of different people to put them in my cookbook. Because I sell a lot more cookbooks as Rachel Ray than you would as, you know, Pete. Like, if I just decided to sell cookbooks, I wouldn't sell shit, right? I'd get nowhere. But Rachel Ray, you slap her name, you slap her Rachel face, her facial face on the front, and now everyone's buying it, right? But, so the thing is, there's not necessarily... this. It's not from the mind, from the kitchen of Rachel Ray, right? It's from 50 different people. Like, every recipe in there is probably from someone different. That pisses me off, and I don't like it, because something I think that's important about a cookbook is a cookbook should be sort of like, all right, if I make a few recipes from this and I really like them, I should be like, okay, well, these are probably sort of to my taste, right? This is probably something I would like. I will continue making things from this book. But when they're put together that way, you don't really know what you're getting. You know, one recipe to the next is very different. There are exceptions to this rule, but that pisses me off and annoys me, and I wish it wasn't that way. So that's my big problem with cookbooks. The other problem I have with cookbooks, I have to say, okay, problem number two, not enough pictures. Cookbooks need pictures in them. I know that, like, Gordon Ramsay, for example, is not interested in pictures in a menu, and I tend to agree with him. There's a certain type of Mexican restaurant that pops up around this area where they have pictures of literally everything on the menu. Like, the menu is all pictures. And some Mexican food that is very tasty doesn't look super appetizing when it's like they photograph a burrito with a side of refried beans and rice in like, and it's on like a styrofoam plate, and you're just like, no. This is too much beige stuff all on one plate, and it kind of all just looks like mush. I mean, a delicious Mexican dish photographed poorly looks like something that you'd eat in a Charles Dickens novel or something. It's just not a good look. However, in a cookbook, I think the pictures are important because they help me see if what I made kind of looks like what I'm supposed to make. Like, does this look how it's supposed to? Especially if you have something weird that's maybe a weird color or a weird texture, or I think a good example of something that could use a picture is something like directions for cooking a steak. Right? Because it's like, well, all right, it's easy to see visually, like, did I overdo it? Did I underdo it? What's going on? So not enough pictures. A lot of them will do, like, a movie tie-in novel. Like, you go see Gremlins, then you get the fucking movie tie-in novel, and it's got, like, 8 pages of pictures in the center. And it'll have a big thing on the front that's like, includes 8 pages of pictures, and you're like, wow, 8. That's... Let's see, there's about 1 billion frames in a movie. So they took 8 billionths of this movie and put it in the book. They made it into a photo and put it in the book, and they're even in color, if you can fucking believe it. There's like 16 color photographs in this picture. Oh my god! Unbelievable! So I would say you could cut down on the recipes a little and put in more photos. Like, everything should have a photo. And if something doesn't have a photo, then you fucked up. Also, though, I think that you could cut down, instead of cutting down on the recipes, a lot of cookbooks have extra stuff, where it just seems like the cook wants to sort of wax on about their philosophies of life or whatever and so on. Most of this I find very boring and very unnecessary. If you have a great story to tell, or if you have a story that's very related, you know, I read this cookbook one time and it was talking about how salty pasta water should be. And basically the cookbook premise was like, listen, everyone comes back from Italy and says how great the pasta is. Here's why. Number one, it's like fresh made pasta. It's not dry. But number two, if you tasted the water that it was cooked in, it's like seawater. It is so salty. And so that's how you should do it. You really cannot oversalt your pasta water, was the premise here. And I was like, okay, like, they're convincing me of a cooking technique. So that's helpful and necessary. But overall, you know, when it's like, oh, my husband loves this dish. I'm thinking of, like, Pioneer Woman will always be like, the Marlboro Man loves this dish. It's one of his favorites when he blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I don't really care. I mean, save it for your blog, which she has. I think the last thing I'd say about cookbooks as an old man complaint is, like, cookbooks got too many fucking recipes in them. I don't need 150 recipes in the cookbook. And, like, also, if I'm getting a cookbook, why not just give me your, like, if you gave me 12 dynamite recipes in a cookbook, that is well worth the price of admission. But if you give me 30, I don't know which ones to pick. I don't know which ones are actually good. Just play the hits. Just give me the hits. When it comes to music... Again, to make a comparison, I like the album. I like listening to the whole thing and having that experience. When it comes to recipes, I want to just the number ones. Just give me the singles. That Beatles number one album is the recipe book I want. There you go. Topic number 2, Space Shuttle. I don't know what he would have been talking about the space shuttle exactly. Maybe this was like Challenger time and it exploded or something. And he was like, everyone's going to want to know what Andy Rooney thinks about this. I think we should put more money into space. I think there's some compelling reasons to do more experimenting in and around space and space travel. I think it's like, I think people see it as very impractical. But I think the thing to me is that I think practical things often come out of impractical things. In other words, like a lot of the technological advances that we still use today are like World War II era things. So, you know, I hate to put it this way, but if we hadn't fought World War II, we probably would not have a lot of things like Wi-Fi, right? Or maybe they would have come much, much later. So a lot of the great stuff we have comes about because of necessity, right? And I think space is such a harsh, terrible environment that it creates necessity. And I think that there's a lot of potential useful stuff that'll come out of space travel. We just need to create a situation for ourselves that requires us to think a little more and maybe suffer a little bit in unusual ways. And so while I kind of get the logic of, hey, there's like starving children, why are we spending money to go into fucking space? At the same time, I'm like, I think that's a false comparison. I don't think it's one or the other. I don't think if we stopped doing space stuff, I mean, we mostly have stopped doing space stuff, right? Like we're not doing it like we were in the 60s and 70s. And yet it seems like there's still starving children. So I'm going to call that a false choice. Bring back the space shuttles. That's what I say. Credits. I have to assume this is talking about credits in motion pictures, because that's really the only kind of credits I can think of that Andy Rooney would have anything to say about. I hope that what he was talking about in, you know, 1992 or something was movie credits have gotten too long or something like that, because it would be hilariously entertaining to me if he said that, because now movie credits are so long. I mean, you go to a Marvel movie and you'll watch three or four columns of names scroll by for like 2 or 3 minutes and they're in size 10-point font. Like, you have almost no hope of actually reading the names. And the only thing that I do in the credits, honestly, is I sit and I watch for hilarious names. But you know what else I've started doing? I don't usually stay for post-credit sequences anymore. Because I feel like this is their something that, you know, Marvel movies, I'm going to blame for it. I don't know if they originated it, but they certainly made it a standard part of the movie. But I've decided to just leave because I don't care anymore. Because number one, like, just show me the shit in the movie. Show me the things in the movie that are important. Number two, if I care about the credits, I will stay and watch them. If there was like an actor and I was wondering who it was, I'll stay and find out. Or like, I remember when I saw Fight Club, I stayed for the credits because I wanted to find out. I was like, is this based on a book or something? Like, what is this? And then I saw the credit and it was like, book by Chuck. And I was like, well, I have no hope of remembering that. So I guess that'll just fade into the distance for a while. Which it did. But yeah, and finally, I think it was Guardians of the Galaxy. The first movie had Howard the Duck in the post-credit sequence. And I'm like, well, that's as good as it gets. You're not going to see something that you like more than that. So really, that's when it jumped the shark for me. As far as, not jumped the shark? That's like, after that it jumped the shark, maybe. That was when it was like, yeah, this is it peaked. It peaked there, and after that I was kind of like, eh, okay, who cares? I mean, you go to, like, the last Avengers thing, and it's like, oh, Nick Fury called Captain Marvel during this whole Thanos thing, and you're like, okay, well, that's cool. The end. I mean, isn't that the end? What happens now? What happens? Do I care? The answer is I do not. I mean, I guess I appreciate all the hard work everybody puts in and all that, but I mean, it's not like... This is like one of those things we only do for movies. You know, it's kind of like Oscars, where it's like, boy, we need to make sure and congratulate these people who receive so little praise and attention. But then the credits are kind of like, I mean, we don't have credits for, like, you get a book, and it's got a cover. You'll have the cover design, usually. You'll have the author of the book. And then, pretty much other than that, you'll have the publisher. And that's about it. The author can choose to use their sort of thanks as a, or acknowledgments as a credits of sorts, but I mean, most of them do a very limited amount. It's just like, yeah, does everybody need to be thanked for everything? There we go. That's where I just hit the old man note there of, does everybody need to be thanked for everything? credits. The next one on the list was weather. Just weather. Just that's all it said was weather. Which I was like, I mean, if there has ever been a topic for an old man to complain about, weather has got to be... That's the classic, right? Because the thing is, the beauty of weather is you can always complain about the weather. If it's unseasonably nice... You can complain about it. If it's unseasonably cold, you can complain about it. If it's Colorado and it's April and we get snow, you can complain about it because you're like, it's spring, we shouldn't be getting snow. If we don't get snow, you can complain about it because you're like, what is all the farmers going to do without the moisture? What are the reservoirs going to do? Did you know Colorado is really more of a desert than it is a swamp? A non-desert? No matter what the weather is, you can complain about it if you're an old man. I mean, you as an old man can move to, like, you know, the desert. You could move to the salt flats or some shit where it's like a million degrees. You can move to Death Valley and complain about it being 100 degrees in June. You still can. I would hope most people would be like, shut up, old man. Like, this is where you fucking moved, right? That was on purpose? I think you did this to yourself, sir. But you still could do it. So, my complaints about the weather. I mean, we had a snow day last week. We had a partial snow day at my work. And I gotta say, like, I think people are very soft about the weather. As far as, like, going home. They're just like, eh, screw it. I mean, it was decided we would close before the weather even started, which I was like, well, shouldn't we? I had to call these schools and be like, hey, we're closing for the day. And there was not a flake of snow that had fallen at this point. So it was weird. It was a little weird. But you know what I think is really weird about snow days? One sign of how good or bad your job is how easy it is to call off work for snow. Whether it's the entire job or just you. But probably also a test of how necessary your job is. Because, like, I went home on a snow day, and the gym was still open, and the Qdoba was open, and I got a burrito. But my work was closed. I was like, well, gee, I don't know if I like what this says about the necessity of my workplace. That's not a good sign. But also, like, if it's like, eh, you don't need to come in today because it's snowing, it's like, well, geez, I don't know. How necessary is this whole thing? How necessary is this whole library endeavor? He must have done one about libraries, right? He had to have. I didn't see it listed, but there must have been at some point. He had listed as a topic twofers. T-W-O-F-E-R-S. So, like, two for ones. Now, I don't know exactly what this meant to him. I'll say this, though. Anyone who buys something that is two for one, other than, like, a grocery or something like that, I mean, if you're buying a two for one electronic device, let's say, probably advertised on television, and they're like, for a limited time, you can get this two for one. That's a pretty sure sign that whatever you're buying is complete bullshit crap. Because if it was worth anything, if it was worth a dime, they wouldn't be like, here's the price of it, or we'll do it for half the price. And you're like, oh, come on. That's ridiculous. Pretty sure sign, and it's like, I don't know why these made-for-TV things do it. Also, I don't know why, it's kind of like these TV things curse you, because they're like, you can get two for one, so you can have two pieces of worthless crap instead of one. Two objects to clutter up that junk drawer. Why spend all your time ordering different items? Is this you? And then it shows a guy, and his junk drawer is mostly empty. And he, like, can stand in it, and he's like, look at all the room in my junk drawer. This is ridiculous. Is this a problem that you're having? And he has to calling number after number to get enough junk to fill your junk drawer. And he's, like, exhausted, up all night calling these numbers. Well, have we got a solution for you? We'll send you two of our piece of shit for the price of one, and you only have to make one phone call. That way you can fill your junk drawer with ease. Oh, it's called a passing lane, motherfucker. It's called that because what you do is you pass. Not pass gas. Don't just sit in there farting, waiting for me. Go. Accelerate. So there you go. Twofers. Tanks. Like tanks? I assume this means like a battle tank. Geez, I don't know what I could say bad about a tank. Seems like a good idea. If you had to go across the land and carry a big gun somehow, it seems like, well, this seems to be a workable way to take a really big gun across a landscape. And then shoot it at somebody. I mean, a tank is basically just a gun on treads, right? That's basically all it is. Which is, in a way, hilarious when you think about it, right? When you think about, like, you know, a tank is just kind of a gun that you can drive around. I don't know. There's something funny about that to me. Call me crazy. But here's my number, so call me maybe. Here's one. Maps. So, like, a map for directions or whatever. I guess my rant for those is, like, I like maps. I think people should use more maps. Less GPS, more maps. Like, if you're going to vacation in another city, just print out some maps, man. Bring a map. I'm telling you, you get to know the area so much better. Because you're walking around, you're consulting the map, you're not just looking at your phone the whole time. And, like, the other thing is, when you use a map, inevitably you'll end up walking a little bit the wrong direction. Because you'll hit a road and you'll be like, okay, I don't know if I want to go this way or this way. So I'm going to have to walk down a block and see which street I'm headed to. And if it's this street, I'm going the right way. If it's this street, I'm going the wrong way. But I think the map also encourages you to not just constantly look at the map. It's like, you kind of try and figure out where you are, get a general direction, and then say, okay, well, I'm going to walk until I hit this street, and then I turn when I hit this street. And then you just do that. And so you, like, actually look around at what's going on, and you see other stuff, and you see what's happening, and then you can usually find your way back a lot easier than if you just go GPS style. So I'm pro maps. Pro paper map. Even today, just because I think it's nice. Also, you can, like, unfold it, get it out. It takes 2 seconds. Your map doesn't run out of battery. There we go. That I hit the old man note. It's perfect. The next one is gloves. Gloves. Boy. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what Andy Rooney had to say about gloves, to be honest. Maybe it's a gloves versus mittens thing. I think mittens keep your hands warmer because they keep your fingers together instead of isolating, right? I mean, is that the whole concept of a mitten, which a glove is kind of violating? I will say this. I think it's hard to find a good pair of gloves that just works for any application. They're either too hot or too not warm enough. They still sell. I don't know why. Why would you want a pair of gloves that is not waterproof? I mean, don't most of us want gloves because of snow and or rain or the potential for touching those things? Like, why is that even still a thing? You can buy those, like, cheap cotton gloves still for, like, a buck. And then you just put them on and then, I don't know. The only purpose of those gloves seems to be to lose one of them. And then you're like, I wish I'd bought three pairs of them. And you still can't really, like, do things with those gloves. Also, even though I'm not a big proponent of it, I think it's sort of weird that they still sell gloves that don't work on a smartphone. I mean, they don't have the little finger touch activate thing. They should probably all have that at this point. Because if you have to take off your fucking glove to use your phone, everyone's just going to be taking off their glove all the time. So it's really like having no glove. You might as well not even have a glove if you're just going to take it off all the time. I mean, you wouldn't take a condom on and off during intercourse. You just leave it on. And if you had to take it off and then put it back on, I would say there's a serious design flaw with this condom. I don't know why you're operating your smartphone with your penis, but there you go. Car names. So the names of different cars, like the Elantra or the Camry. I think I like car names better that are, like, not real words. Like the Elantra or the Camry that I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's not, like, a thing. I mean, the Accent, for example, is like, that seems like kind of a dumb name for a car to me. Civic. I'm sort of like, why? I don't know. Your car name makes me think of, like, I have to go vote or go do jury duty or something. It's not an exciting car name. I hate the name Kia Soul. Like, this is your soul. Okay, this car's got a lot of soul. That seems like a reach to me. It's not a specific car name, but Volvo. Why does Volvo sound like vulva, but have, like, the male symbol, the symbol for man in its logo? That is what that is, right? That circle with the arrow popping off of it? Which I'm like, so I guess this is a man viewed from above and his penis is shooting out because he has a boner. And that's how we decided to make the symbol for man. And for woman, it's a cross with a head on top. Okay. Sure. Both of those things definitely scream male and female to me. But whatever. So I have two least favorite cars right now. One is the Nissan Juke. Look around for one. You'll see one. They're weird-looking, hideous, and I don't understand them. And the other is the Ford Flex. The Ford Flex is a fucking minivan with a truck-ish front on the top. Because they're like, okay, well, some people don't want to have a minivan. So let's make a minivan, because let's be honest, some people need a fucking minivan, and then we will put this front on it so they can be like, I'm still cool. I'm driving an SUV, not a minivan. It's totally different. And the Ford Flex, that's also a horrible... I mean, the Nissan Juke is bad, because it's like you're juking someone, like when you're running a play in football, and you like get around somebody. That's what this is named for? But then the Ford Flex, I think, is even worse. Because I'm like, could you have a car that is less like, manly man bodybuilder looking car. The Ford Flex to me is like an out of it dad. A dad who's like, yeah, me and my kids listened to Limp Bizkit on the way to school today. You're like, okay. That sounds like a terrible idea. Pardon me. Teeth brushes. Now, I had to highlight this one because it says teeth brushes instead of toothbrushes. I had my latest dental appointment. It went great. No cavities. They said that I had obviously done a good job brushing and flossing. There was one spot that I wasn't flossing as well as I should. So she showed it to me and whatever. Was like, you know, hit that, but otherwise you're doing good. And then it was like, you have a little bit of gum recession, which I was like, oh, I know. I got a fucking surgery for that twice. I'm good where I am for now. Thanks. Been through the ringer. And she was like, well, yeah, it looks pretty good. And I was like, yeah, no shit. It's kind of like, I get mad when I go to the dentist. For some reason, I get mad when they tell me I've done a good job. I don't want them to tell me I haven't been doing a good job or that I have a cavity or something. But when they're like, hey, looks good. Like, you didn't even really need to come in. I'm kind of like, well, that was a waste of time, I gotta say. But number one best thing about this... Okay, there were two great things about the hygienist I had this time. Number one, she... well, her stomach kept gurgling in my ear, which was kind of funny. But then, number one, she told me... She did x-rays and was like, I don't see anything. I don't see any cavities or anything. It looks really good. Like, I'll have the doctor come and check, but... Looks pretty good to me. Where usually I feel like they do it and then they keep you in suspense. You know, or like if they see something, then the dentist comes in and they're like, oh, check out the fucking number 24 over there. Like it's a big secret. And I'm like, listen, whatever's happening is happening in my face. Just go ahead and break the news to me of like, you know, there's something here. I'm going to have the doctor look at it more closely. But don't give me the... Don't keep me waiting. So she didn't do that. The other thing was when it was time to do the polish, which this is like the most unnecessary step. I get they do the scraping and then they do this, but then they do the polish and then they got to floss you again and all this shit. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know if I need that, but fine. But so when she was doing it, instead of... Usually they're like, do you want pina colada? Do you want mojito? Do you want this? Which I'm like... How much of drunks are all of us that we're all like, what kind of toothpaste flavor should I get at the dentist? Oh, pina colada, mojito, bourbon, Pabst Blue Ribbon. Oh my god. This is great. You guys have all these great flavors that remind me of being drunk. I wish I was drunk right now. This will give me like, almost like I'm a little drunk in the middle of the day and my health insurance is paying for it. This is amazing. Okay, and so she was just like, I have mint, is that okay? And I was like, yes, thank you. She's like, I like mint too, that's my preference. And I was like, me too. Because you know what it's like, mint? It's like brushing your teeth, which is what this is. Why don't we just keep this in the realm of teeth brush and do it that way? Now, they always give me like a new toothbrush whenever I go in, which I'm like, guys, I am set for toothbrushes for life. And they give me, like, different toothpastes. They're like, do you ever experience sensitivity? And I'm like, yeah, sometimes. They're like, here's a Colgate Sensitive. Try the Colgate Total or whatever. And I'm like, I mean, I know that they just send you this shit and you want to give it away, but, like, I really don't need it. I promise you. Look, if you want to give me toothpaste and toothbrushes at the dentist, how about we'll just make a deal? Every time I come in, you give me two full tubes of toothpaste and a nice toothbrush, and I will go home and get rid of what I had before and start using this. But until that happens, forget it. Also, Sensodyne, that toothpaste tastes like a mint-flavored pickle. It's disgusting. And I'm like, you know, I think I'd rather just deal with the pain. I'd rather deal with the pain of... eating something that, you know, or tasting something cold and then whatever, because this is bullshit. So there you go. Teeth brushes. We did it. Catalogs. Now, because this was the 90s, I'm going to assume that Andy Rooney's rant was anti-catalog. Like, I am not in favor of these catalogs that keep showing up at my house. I'm going to do a pro-catalog rant. There are a couple catalogs missing from the world that I think are a sad loss. Number one is a catalog that I got from the Johnson Smith Company called Things You Never Knew Existed. This was a catalog of completely worthless shit that was great. So they would have, like, gizmos for the house. Things I got from the Johnson Smith catalog include the Gunverter, a remote control for the TV that I'm almost positive they would never sell today because it looked exactly like a pistol, except on the back it had like a number keypad so you could punch stuff in. So it was your channel changer. Unfortunately, you could hold it down for rapid fire, and I say unfortunately because it went so fast. The thing was so sensitive and had such a hair trigger that you would cycle past channels that you wanted. Trying to stop at a channel you wanted was almost impossible. And so then what you would do, though, because you would go past so quickly, is then you'd have to decide, well, do I want to admit defeat and push the channel down button that's on this remote? Or do I want to continue using it and try and time it, and I'll just keep pulling the trigger? I'll go all the way through the top of the channels, cycle back to the bottom, and then come up on it again. Which is usually what you did, and then it got frustrating, because you'd be like, it took me like 5 minutes to cycle through 15 channels and land on the channel I wanted. Like, this took a level of skill and reflex that I do not possess, obviously. This is not designed for me. This is not a product designed with Pete in mind. I got leather fingerless gloves, because I was going to be a tough boy. I don't know why, what I thought I was going to do with them, but I thought they were cool. I fortunately never wore them to school or I think outside of the house. I also bought large because I was like, I don't know what size is right. So being a stupid kid, I was like large because large probably isn't even right for me now, let alone back then. So they were giant. So they were fingerless gloves, but really the fingerless nub that was in there almost acted like a finger to the glove. And they were, I mean, as worthless as leather fingerless gloves are in general, I managed to make them a little more worthless with my bad decision making. So look at me go. I'm sure I got something else from there at some point. My younger brother, I think that's where he ordered a pellet gun from that my dad shot in the garage and it ricocheted and hit me right in the corner of the eye. Fucking Christmas Story style. Anyway. Oh, there was... Oh, man. There was some kind of soda we got off of this thing. I think that's where it came from. And it was called... I can't remember what it was called. It was like brain juice or something. And it was blue. And it was supposed to be like super caffeinated or super sugared or both. And like just make your brain super powerful for a short period or something. It also was, like, jalapeno flavored for some reason. I mean, it had jalapeno in it, and it was a disgusting flavor. Which maybe was a sales point, because, A, if you drink something that tastes that disgusting, you're like, well, this must have some effect. Because, like, okay, when you're young and you try coffee, it tastes kind of disgusting. When you have beer for the first time, it tastes kind of disgusting. But you're like, well, it's worth it because it's got an effect. I'm not drinking this for the flavor. So maybe this was their way of like going backwards and saying, well, if we make it taste like shit, everyone's going to think it's having some kind of an effect on their brain. And number two, maybe it was a sales tactic because you're like, it would be impossible for anyone to assess whether or not this brain juice was working. It wasn't brain juice. I'll see if I can remember to look this up later. Or someone can correct me, because someone will remember. But if you can't finish it, if it's impossible for anyone known to man to finish it, because it just tastes so vile, then it's pretty hard to refute any claims made by the beverage, right? Because you're like, well, did you drink the whole thing? Of course not. I'm still alive, aren't I? Obviously, I didn't drink the whole thing. Well, then how can you know what the effects of it are? And it's like, touche. I mean, if I was like, cigarettes don't have any effect, and they're like, well, how much of a cigarette did you smoke? And I'm like, I took 2 puffs, and that's all I could do. I think people would probably be like, well, listen, I don't think you really smoked that cigarette. I don't think that you made a good faith effort to see what that cigarette could do for you. And I'd have to be like, you know, you're right. When you're right, you're right. And in this instance, you are right. I withdraw my complaint about this juice not working to make my brain good. Also, to make my brain good. Obviously, it's not working for me. The other funny thing about this is, like, there was a period of this for kids where it's like Jolt Cola was, like, super caffeinated, or you'd do this, or, like, I don't know, you'd drink a... Like, when Red Bull was kind of a newer thing, you'd be drinking that, right? And what's hilarious about it to me now is, looking back, I'm like, what exactly did I think as, like, a 9-year-old that I needed extra brain energy for? Like, what problems was I solving? What projects was I working on that, as a 9-year-old, I'm like, this is going to take all of my thought and concentration. I better drink this brain juice so that I will get the brain enhancement that I need to solve this problem. This is going to be great. What an idiot. Like, what an idiot I was. I mean, I still am, but at least... Well, I don't know. There's no at least. I withdraw my at least. Because what an idiot I was and am. But it's kind of like, I think parents too, I got to say as a parent, because you would always feel this resistance from parents. Like if you were like, let's get Jolt Cola, they'd be like, no. And I think the thing about it was probably that they were like, you do not need Jolt Cola. And looking back on it, I'm like, they are 100% correct. I did not need that. There's no part of me that needed a Jolt Cola or should have a Jolt Cola. I would make the same decision as a parent. I would be like, you know what? I don't think you need that. I don't think I'm going to get that for you because I don't think it's going to... All it's going to do is make you all excited and crazed. And the last thing I needed to be doing is taking care of, like, a 13-year-old fucking crazin running around the house. And then I'm like, why is this kid so crazy? And I'm like, it's my fault. This is 100% my fault. There was this time years ago when I was dating this lady, and she had a nephew. And so he went to his dad's house in Santa Fe, New Mexico, for the summer. And so we drove down there for like a weekend visit, you know, just to see him, hang out with him, whatever. And so we were going around and like we were in the downtown part, and he was young. I mean, like 8, 10, something. And he was like, we went to a coffee shop because I was like, well, I'm going to get a cup of coffee. And he's like, I want a coffee. And apparently this is a thing with him. Like he's had coffee before. And so he was like, I want one. And the barista was kind of looking at us like, do I give this kid a coffee? And I was like set to say no, or to say like, can you give him like a decaf or something? Or like give him something that tastes like coffee, but it's not really coffee. But my girlfriend was like, yeah, sure, you can have a coffee. So he has it, and he's like hyped up as fuck and really annoying for about an hour. And then he crashed hard and was even worse and was just like almost crying because he's a kid and he doesn't understand why he's feeling the way he feels, which is like feeling like garbage. He's having the hardest caffeine come down. I mean, imagine if you drank, you know, a quadruple espresso and then another one. And then in about 2 hours, you're probably not going to feel so good. Now, you're an adult, so feeling like shit is something that you're just used to. I think that's the thing, is when you're an adult, you're just sort of used to, like, this is life. Life is mostly about feeling like shit and dealing with it. And the different ways, you know, growing up is really about the different ways you can feel terrible physically and emotionally and how you deal with it. And you find new ways and new tools to deal with these new ways of feeling like shit that you'd never anticipated. But, you know, he didn't have those tools because he was a child. So anyway, that's the thing. So I can totally see, and when I was in that situation, I was very prepared to deny a child the right to drink an over-caffeinated beverage. And brain juice. There you go. Came from a fucking magazine. Or a catalog. So thanks for sending me those catalogs. The other catalog that I do wish still existed was SkyMall. Like, definitely if I... Eccentric millionaire ideas, as we've talked about on here. Ideas that I have where I'm like, look, if I became a millionaire and just kind of... If I had Bezos money. Because I'm like, this dude should stop working at Amazon and start figuring out how he's going to spend his money. Because he's wasting it. He's wasting it by amassing it and not doing anything with it that's crazy and interesting. So I like to keep these ideas in mind because that way if I do become a millionaire, I can be an eccentric millionaire and I won't have to come up with ideas now that I've got the millions. I'll be like, no. Before you had the millions, you had all these good ideas. So now there's no pressure. You just have to execute. One of them is definitely bringing back SkyMall. I mean, because SkyMall is the fucking weirdest shit. Although I think Etsy is the new SkyMall. Because although Etsy is more handmade and crafted as opposed to corporate and whatever, so it's very like 2010s as opposed to 80s and 90s, it's mostly nonsense you don't really need. So it's a little more it's more tasteful in the time now, but it's not necessary. Let's just say that. Telephone books. I only really have one thing to say about telephone books. Telephone books are obviously at this point a scam. Telephone books are obviously a vector for advertising. So here's what I do. Let's say I'm starting the Helpful Snowman telephone directory. And then what I do is I go to your restaurant and I'm like, do you want to buy an ad in our telephone directory? And they say, sure. And so then I put an ad in there. And then I say, oh, other place, do you want to buy an ad? And they're like, sure. And I basically sell all the ad space. And then I'm like, and then I'll just put a bunch of publicly available information in here. In order to have a phone book to sell. And that's it. So it's not for the use of anyone who actually would have one. It's for selling advertising space. And then they feel like the need to dump them on your porch and stuff. I used to live in an apartment building, you know, where the doors were outside. And oh my God, did we got a phone book like every 3 weeks out there. I am not kidding. We got so many fucking phone books that it was unreal. But you can find easy directions for tearing a phone book in half, which is pretty cool. And I wish I'd learned how to do that at a time when people still had phone books. Because now it's like not a useful skill. Do you like how I quantify that as a useful skill? And I'm like, it's not the useful skill it once was to destroy something with your hands. At one time, you know, time was... Destroying something with your hands was a useful and impressive skill. Now, it's like people don't even appreciate the doing of this. You know, something I can say for recreational weed. Lots of highways seem to be adopted by these weed companies. I don't know if that means, it probably doesn't, because like, I feel like it used to be, okay, you adopt a highway. And what happens then is I'm Boy Scouts chapter 243 or whatever, and I adopt a highway, and that means like every 3 or 4 months we go out and we fucking pick up trash at the highway, right? But then I think the way it seems now is kind of like, hold on, I'm a little lost here. Something has happened. The way it seems now is like you just pay for it, but then I'm like, do you pay somebody to clean it up for you? Is that what's happening? What's going on here? This is a weird driving situation that's always kind of funny when you like can see where you're trying to go, but you're like, I don't know how to get in there. How do I get from where I am now to there? It's like when you're doing a project at work or something and you're trying to figure this out, and then you're like, well, the first step is to figure out where we are now. And then from there, we can say, okay, and here's where we want to go, and so on. But I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how helpful it is to actually know where we are now. That might not actually do anything. Not real sure. Anyway, I think I've got this figured out. Jaywalking. This is a tough call. Do I think Andy Rooney was like a fan of jaywalking or anti-jaywalking? I think he probably was a fan. I think old guys are jaywalkers, and I think they're jaywalkers because they're like, I'm old, and so fuck you, get out of my way. Like, I'm the old person here, so I'm going to decide when the right time to cross is, and I don't need some whippersnapper telling me what to do with my life and my time, damn it. Which I don't totally disagree with. That's probably true. But nevertheless. So I'm guessing he's pro jaywalking. This is a tough call for me because I'm sort of both. I'm pro jaywalking. It's like, this is how I think gun people feel about guns, is how I feel about jaywalking. Good for me and fine for me, and other people don't seem to be able to handle it. And so I don't know what to do because I still want to be able to jaywalk and not have it be a big deal. But if someone else was like, hey, I think more people should be able to jaywalk, or like, I think other people can handle jaywalking responsibly, and I'm like, I disagree. I'm going to respectfully disagree with that. Completely and respectfully disagree. So I don't know. It's like, jaywalking. Here's my opinion. Yes for me, no for everyone else. How about that? Hey, no one said an old man has to be fair. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone dogs in? Are they in home?